Welcome back for the third hour of Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. I have to be honest with you, folks. I'm actually not quite sure where we're at. Have we finished with polygamy? No, we haven't finished with polygamy. And we still have, I didn't mention this before the break, for this third hour, we still got some AP audio from a pastor who's leading an internet outreach called Faithful Democrats. It's intended to reach Democrats of faith. And we'll hear some of what he has to say. Is there anything new in this, or is it just more of the religious left? That's coming up a little bit later here. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Talking about Warren Jeffs, his capture, his arraignment there in Utah. He's been extradited back to Utah to face charges of basically facilitating statutory rape. And that's the big problem they've got. And then, of course, there's the problem of polygamy. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Mike is on the line. He's calling from Kansas City. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, hey, Todd. How you doing?
I'm doing well.
Oh, good. Yeah, I haven't talked to you in a long time. I just first wanted to say I'm a regular supporter of Issues, et cetera, and I say that only to suggest that maybe those that are listening might consider doing the same.
That's a dandy suggestion. Thank you.
Yeah. I was a Peace Corps volunteer in Kenya for a couple of years, and I actually lived with a woman who was the first wife of a man who had three wives for a couple of months. And I helped in a ministry for the street boys there in Kenya. And a huge majority of these street children are the product of polygamous marriages where one woman, one wife would die prematurely, and then the other wives would treat her children so badly they would find life on the streets more pleasant than, you know, living in that environment. And then another thing, Osama bin Laden, his father had three wives, and he was the product of a polygamous marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I found was kind of interesting was the psychology and the psychological impact that these polygamous marriages have on the children. And I've heard very little about that. I wonder if you might comment on that.
Well, thank you. That's a very good suggestion. First of all, yes, polygamy, by the way, here in the West, of course, polygamy is an odd thing. And we look at it and we kind of turn it over in our hands and say, wow, that's strange. But there are places in the world, mostly in Southern Africa, where polygamy is the norm. In not only tribal cultures, but tribal cultures that are transitioning to kind of second world status, polygamy is certainly still the norm. And Mike mentions just one of the possible negative outcomes of polygamy in a tribal culture where you have a first wife and a second wife and a third and maybe a fourth. The wives have a pecking order. And if your mother happens to die and your pecking order in the family is determined by your mother's ability to kind of go to bat for you with your common father, you might end up out on the street. There's just one possible negative outcome of polygamy. Of course, that's in a different culture than ours. One would hope that we wouldn't get to the point where, in our effort to redefine marriage, we would, be willing to have children abandoned. Now, the other thing that Mike raises is, and I think this goes more to the biblical response to polygamy, because, of course, Christians might be under the mistaken notion that we have not a leg to stand on here when it comes to opposing polygamy. I want to address that in a few minutes. But if you will look objectively at the narratives of the Old Testament, where most of the polygamy is found among the greats, like Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and David and Solomon. He wasn't just polygamous. He was, what would you call this? He was pluripotent, in the words of embryonic stem cell research. He had so many wives, he didn't know what to do. But if you look at, and it's never addressed explicitly in the Old Testament, but if you look at the relationships that stem from one husband, many wives, and then the children that flow from them. While God still certainly works through that, we wouldn't have the 12 tribes of Israel if Jacob didn't have his two wives and two concubines. It's 12 sons by four wives. God can certainly work through it, but the families can only be described generously as dysfunctional. in almost every case. David's case is probably the best case of all. And the very kind of things you see that Mike observed in Kenya with tribal polygamy there that still prevails, the very kind of things are taking place in the Old Testament among the patriarchs, the giants of faith in the Old Testament who practiced polygamy. The very kinds of things. Kids being put out of the house. One son is favored over another. They're trying to kill each other. Amazingly, God works through all of it. He works through the dysfunction of Jacob's polygamous family to get Jacob and his whole family down into Egypt so that he can save them through the Exodus and the Passover. So God can certainly use it, but that doesn't mean he approves of it. Before we finish this conversation, I'll have a few thoughts on the Bible's position on polygamy. Carol writes this from St. Louis. In view of arguments in favor of gay marriage, it seems that polygamy might easily become legal and acceptable in our culture under the umbrella of tolerance and acceptance of all religious beliefs. You know, there's another aspect, Carol, you're right, that we haven't entertained, and that is, if we're really going to be tolerant of people's religious beliefs, Warren Jeffs can't be left out. So she continues, how would religious people practicing polygamy defend the practice in the face of God's created order for the marriage of one man and one woman? Well, Carol, you anticipate my final thoughts on the subject. That's a good question. Let's talk about the Mormons for a second, because Warren Jeffs is in that line of thinking. If you're going to practice polygamy as a Mormon, you do have a problem. You do have to reconcile the created order, which is one Adam and one Eve, which, by the way, Adam and Eve honored, as far as we can tell, to the very end of their days. Adam never took another wife. If they're going to take that seriously, they have to reconcile that with Joseph Smith and Brigham Young and the other early Mormon leaders' practice of polygamy. I'll tell you how they do it. It's very simple, Carol. They simply say that that original revelation of one man, one woman, the created order, as you called it, is no longer operative because we've got a new revelation. Mormonism gets much of what it does by simply appealing to a new additional revelation. Even the Book of Mormon is subtitled Another Testament of Jesus Christ. So I think that's how they'd work it out. Steve calls from his car. Hi, Steve.
Two thoughts. First off, you know, people think, oh, polygamy such as that thing when they see, you know, Mormons who tend to be Caucasians. But would they have the same feelings if it was a family who from Saudi Arabia who moved here and they lived next door? Would they have the same feelings?
Well, it raises a good question. If they're Muslims, then if I'm not mistaken, according to the Quran or whatever other holy writings there may be in Islam, a man is permitted more than one wife. I can't remember if it's five or three. Doesn't really make any difference. More than one. Some of the closet polygamists among us might be Muslims. But again, it goes back to Carol's question. If it's not Warren Jeffs and his kooky little 6,000 out there in Utah, maybe it's just the stockbroker who's a Muslim who secretly wants to have, according to his religious beliefs, more than one wife. Lay aside the fact that there are other concerns about Islam. There are more than one religion. There's more than one religion in this world that practices polygamy. Steve's got a follow-up. Hi, Steve.
Hey, now a Christian response on how, as Christians, we can hold against that. First of all, isn't marriage between a man and woman supposed to show the relationship as be a mirror of what Christ in the church is?
Yes, certainly.
Okay, that being said, it's not Christ in the church is, it's a single bride. When Christ talks about the bride and Paul writes about the bride, it's a single. It's never the plural.
I think you're absolutely right, Steve. That's something that bears our attention for a second here. Go to Ephesians 5 and ask yourself this question. Does anything that Paul says there about husbands and wives And he assumes, by the way, in the Christian community, that the standard will be a husband with one wife. Paul sets the standard for the clergy, for the bishops and the pastors and the deacons, as one wife, as opposed to two. Not as opposed to none, but as opposed to more than one. So he says, if you're going to be a pastor in the church, you've only got yourself one wife. But can anything that Paul says in Ephesians 5, where he compares husbands and wives and Christ and the church, make any sense at all if polygamy will be tolerated as a perfectly acceptable view of marriage? It can't, because, as Steve rightly points out, it's not Christ and the churches. It's Christ and the church. He has one bride. Another good reason for keeping marriage as God originally gave it to us. Well, the new terror tape is making the rounds. A top bin Laden deputy and an American turned Islam urge other Americans to convert.
That new videotape released by Al-Qaeda features an American member of the terrorist group calling for Americans to convert to Islam or face the consequences. In the 48-minute tape, Ayman al-Sawari, Osama bin Laden's second-in-command, is seen first. Adam Gadan, an American-born al-Qaeda spokesman, appears next on the tape, seemingly from a different location.
To what can we attribute the obvious ignorance of Western peoples in general towards the religion of the Muslims and its teachings?
In this latest video, he calls on Americans to convert to Islam or face serious consequences.
To America and the rest of Christendom, we say, either repent of your misguided ways and enter into the light of truth, or keep your poison to yourself.
Gadan was last seen in an al-Qaeda video in July, marking the one-year anniversary of the London subway bombings.
When we bomb their cities and civilians like they bomb ours, or destroy their infrastructure and means of transportation like they destroy ours, or kidnap their non-combatants like they kidnap ours, no sane Muslim should shed tears for them.
The California native and former heavy metal music fan is wanted by the FBI in connection with past terrorist threats. This latest video contains no direct threats, but it comes just 1 week before the fifth anniversary of the 9/11 attacks.
Now, that comes from ABC News, by the way. I don't know if it means danger, if we should read anything to the timing of the tape. That's only time will tell there. Interesting, though, that when bin Laden, this has to come with either bin Laden's order or under his auspices, because we're talking about bin Laden's second in command, being depicted on the same tape with a convert to Islam and al-Qaeda, an American. You heard him speaking there. This is an appeal. This is an appeal from that terrorist element in Islam to us Americans. Look, come into the light of Islam. Convert. There are people who look at this and they say, this is not a religious war. I don't know if it's a religious war, because not all religious wars are fought solely for the purpose of religion. But to ignore the religious element in this is unthinkable. So what do you make of this? An American who, he lumps together America and Christianity the way a lot of the religious right do. Did you hear what he said? To all Christendom and Americans, he said. He simply equated Christendom and America together, kind of the way the religious right does. He appealed for us to convert to Islam. Care to comment? 505-7850. 1-800-730-2727. We have an in-studio email address. It's issuesetc@kfuo.org. It's audio open lines. Well, we've talked a lot on Issues, etc., about the unrest in the Sudan. And, of course, several months ago, we talked about a very fragile peace that existed in the Sudan and the ongoing need of the refugees there. The peace seems to be falling apart there in that African country, and here's the latest from Reuters News.
The world's biggest aid operation is already under threat in the Darfur region of Sudan. Access to more than 3 million victims of the war is at its lowest since the conflict began. Now the Khartoum government has given African Union truce monitors till the end of the month to get out. A new offensive against rebel groups has raised fears of a return to all-out war. The United Nations Security Council last week passed a resolution to send a force of more than 20,000 to Darfur. The plan is to replace the AU peacekeepers, whose mission could only be funded until mid-October. AU forces have failed to stem the violence in Darfur, which has escalated since a May peace deal signed by only one of the three rebel factions involved in negotiations. Sudan's government resents the AU handing over its mission to the UN. Thousands in Darfur also fear the AU is no longer objective. UN troops could only move in with the consent of Sudan's government, which has rejected the plan. Critics say Khartoum fears that UN troops would arrest officials over allegations of war crimes in the region. The US has described as genocide the many acts of rape, pillage and murder in Darfur, a charge denied by the Sudanese government. Paul Chapman, Reuters.
What I heard yesterday on the story pertaining to the Sudan is that if it goes on the way it's going right now and the peace agreement that was made continues to fall apart, there's going to be a widespread withdrawal of all aid to the refugees. And that means, that doesn't mean that our efforts up to this point haven't been good. We talk a lot about LCMS World Relief's efforts in the Sudan. It doesn't mean that that has all comes to naught. It simply means that it's going to make those efforts that much more difficult. It's Audio Open Lines, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. The opportunity to help still exists. And even if things go wrong, terribly wrong in the Sudan, wronger than they are already now, the need would even be greater. So consider earmarking a donation for the Sudan through LCMS World Relief. Pastor Matt Harrison and LCMS World Relief are doing their very best there in the Sudan, especially in the Darfur region, but all over the country where they can. 1-888-930-4438, 1-888-930-4438 is the number you can use to donate. And if you want to find out more, go to our website, issuesetc.org, and look for the LCMS World Relief logo there. You got something you want to say?
Yeah, I'm just bringing this up before Chuck Rather calls me. I don't think wronger is not a word.
I didn't say wronger. I said more wrong than already.
You said
wronger.
Wronger. I bet Chuck calling right now.
Wronger. I'll tell you what, if they can redefine marriage to include a man and a man or a woman and a woman, if they can redefine marriage to mean polygamy, I think Wilkins saying wronger is a victimless crime, and I'll just play the libertarian for a little bit. It's okay for me to say wronger. It's not wronger for me to say wronger, because I'm not hurting anybody. I'm not hurting anybody or anything except the English language. And it takes enough abuse already. It's got a thick skin. Dave is calling from his car. Hi, Dave.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, I'd like to make a comment about this Taliban, this American jihadist or whatever, making and asking America to convert to Islam or else. That, after reading the article in the Christian Research Journal, which is the part one article about the Egyptian, who's kind of the grandfather of all the terrorism going on these days, wrote a book, and they all their stuff comes from him and his ideas and all. And also the excellent CNN report that was done on Osama bin Laden, not the guard thing. It was said in there that Osama was criticized for not asking his people, the people who he attacked, to convert to Islam first, because apparently that's in the Quran or something like that. So the table's been set now by this announcement, convert to Islam or else. And so there's no criticism that can be leveled for the next attack that may be coming, or try to be coming, because they've asked to convert to Islam. Therefore, now they're free to do an attack without criticism.
Well, Dave, thank you very much. I find that rather compelling. I'm not willing to go out on a limb and say it means that we can expect another attack. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. Because, of course, we can always expect another attack. We just don't know whether the timing is significant. But I think you're right. I think that they're simply giving us fair warning in a language we can understand. Here's an English-speaking former American, now a member of Al-Qaeda, one of bin Laden's inner circle, apparently. He's an Al-Qaeda spokesperson. a convert to Islam. There he is, in plain English, telling us it's time for America, and he said all Christendom, to convert, to come into the light of Islam. He says, if you don't, you can stay in the darkness and keep your poison for yourselves. Now, is that a veiled threat? I don't know. By the way, Dave mentions the Christian Research Journal cover story. The author of that cover story, Charles Strummel, will be our guest tomorrow on Issues, Etc. It's audio open lines this Wednesday, September the 6th. You can join the conversation, 505-7850, or 1-800-730-2727. You can also email us here in the studio, issuesetc@kfuo.org. issuesetc@kfuo.org. We've laid a lot on the table. You know, yesterday when we closed the program, I asked Jeff whether or not we had anything scheduled for today, and he said not a thing. And as soon as the mics were off, good old Craig said, that means audio open lines, doesn't it? Because Craig works his tail off during audio open lines. He's the guy who actually has to make all the audio occur. I just stand here and point fingers and wiggle my hands, and he's the one who actually has to make
no
it occur.
To read the newspaper today, hey?
Right, but the way it is when Jeff doesn't do his job, Craig has to do his job.
Looks like I'll have to save...
Who found all this audio? Who finds it?
Well, let's be fair here. You found it. You found it.
Right.
I'll give you the finder's fee. Okay. Who produced it?
You produced it.
I produced it. That's right.
I can't touch buttons. You want me to touch buttons?
And by the way, since I've already tipped my hand on that one, the little snafu we had in that one piece on Warren Jeffs, I think it was, or on polygamy, Joe the polygamist, that was my fault because, after all, I produced the audio. But then Craig's got to actually make it come on. It doesn't do any good to find it. It doesn't do any good to produce it. It doesn't do any good to sit there and think about it and plan it unless you got a guy like Craig who, through his nimble fingers and quick wit and thinking, can actually make the audio come out of the box and go to our listeners.
When we have days like this where we have a lot of audio, I have to save the Sudoku for when I get home. I can't do it while I'm
sitting
here.
Okay, well, you know, now you got something to occupy your evenings. You know, Craig did suggest that if we're going to have polygamous marriage, it only stands to reason that we have polygamous dating. And I thought the only one of us three here that applies to is Craig. Craig's single. He's the consummate bachelor. I won't call him a confirmed bachelor because that would probably be a diss, but he's a consummate bachelor. And look, you got a lot of time on your hands. You ought to consider the polygamous dating option. You think you could get any of the girls up there in Collinsville to agree to a polygamous date? I mean, if you can polygamously marry the women, you should be able to date them more than one at a time.
I think that's a challenge I don't want to have to overtake.
Joe can do it.
I think there'd be a lot of jealousy in an arrangement like that.
Yeah, so would I. But apparently, Joe, our anonymous polygamist that we heard about earlier, has found a way to overcome that. What seems to me just the natural outcome of polygamous dating or polygamous marriage. I don't know how they do it, but they do. That's another thing I can't figure out. How do they pay for it, and how do they manage that home situation? When we come back, more of your phone calls and your email during audio open lines. We'll also hear he stopped typing. He's exercising this kind of freakish control over me. Yeah, we're going to hear about an internet outreach of Democrats called Faithful Democrats, and what they're trying to do is draw in some religious support for that political party. It's audio open lines. We'll be right back.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Every month, we tell you about our Issues, Etc. book of the month. Well, our book of the month for September isn't a book. It's an audio CD and a companion booklet. It's called Listening to Luther. On this audio CD, Issues, Etc. regular guest Dr. Ken Sherb narrates Luther's Small Catechism. This narration is accompanied by hymns that fit the theme of each part of the catechism. Listening to Luther is $14.99. You can find it at either of the two Concordia Publishing House bookstores, one at 3558 South Jefferson in the city, the other on the campus of Concordia Seminary in Clayton. When you stop by, mention Issues, Etc., and ask for the Issues, Etc. book of the month for September, the audio CD, Listening to Luther. The two locations, 3558 South Jefferson, or on the campus of Concordia Seminary. It's the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for September, Listening to Luther.
Millions of years, then God's an ogre.
Answers with Ken Ham, one of the writers for the new apologetics magazine called Answers. Ken, I know a lot of Christians who say that God created over millions of years, but why would that make God an ogre?
Well, Mark, if people believe in millions of years, they also have to accept that the fossil record, with all of its death and evidence of violence and disease, was laid down over millions of years before man. Thus, the world today, with the same death, disease, and violence, was created that way by God millions of years ago. Even non-Christians understand the problem here. For instance, one secular scientist said the following in Nature magazine, quote, "Whatever the God implied by the data of natural history may be like, he's not the Protestant God of waste not, want not. He's also not a loving God who cares about his productions. The God of the Galapagos is careless, wasteful, indifferent, almost diabolical. He is certainly not the sort of God to whom anyone would be inclined to pray." End of quote. You see, when Christians take Genesis literally, then the God of the Bible is the one who created a perfect world that's now marred by our sin. Christians can't consistently believe in a loving God and cling to millions of years at the same time. That does make God an ogre.
Ken Ham looks much more into this topic of why Christians should not believe in an old earth. The issue of death and suffering is very much linked to it. Find out for yourself when you read Ken Ham's free booklet on death and suffering on our attractive website, AnswersRadio.com.
The divorce rate among Christians is virtually identical with that of non-Christians. The majority of Christian as well as non-Christian singles indulge in sex outside of marriage. Many Christians, including pastors, are addicted to pornography. Living together and homosexuality are now socially acceptable. How can the Christian sexual ethic be recovered? How can the church move beyond merely denouncing sin to bring to bear the gospel of Christ on these issues? Hi, this is Todd Wilkin inviting you to attend a Christian Vision for Love and Marriage Conference, September the 18th through the 20th, on the campus of Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. You can find out more at our website, issuesetc.org, or by calling Concordia Theological Seminary, 260-452-2204. A Christian Vision for Love and Marriage Conference, September the 18th through the 20th, in Fort Wayne, Indiana, 260-452-2204.
On the next Adventures in Odyssey, new twists emerge in Eugene's search for his father. Though he never doubts that prayer matters, Eugene is determined to act on any lead. A forgotten relative, a spy agency in Chicago, and a tragic accident are all part of the deepening plot. On the next Adventures in Odyssey.
Saturday mornings at 8:30 on AM 850 KFUO.
Faithful Democrats, I think, is an important way to define what's going on with this new website, because it identifies us, obviously, as people of faith who are Christians, but more importantly, it also lets people know that we're not ashamed to admit we are Democrats, and that you can be a person of faith, you can be a Christian, and be a Democrat.
That's the Reverend Romel Toon. He's co-chairman of FaithfulDemocrats.com, talking about an internet outreach launched by the Democratic Party. They're attempting to reach people of faith, and they're not afraid to be called Democrats or Christians. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Here in the last half hour of the program, I want your reaction to this new website, FaithfulDemocrats.com. Do you think it will be effective in reaching people of faith? If you're a Democrat, are you saying to yourself, it's about time? Who are we going to be talking to when we get back from Chicago, from the National Council of Churches? It's kind of along these lines. There's a new book out. Who's Bob Edgar. He's the General Secretary of the National Council of Churches. He's got a new book, and his thesis is, look, the religious issues, the moral issues, the values have been taken hostage by the religious right, and it's time to take them back. Now, Romel Toon is pretty much calling for the same thing. So do you think this will do the trick when it comes to that, what they're calling the religion gap for the Democratic Party, just not striking on all cylinders when it comes to people of faith? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or email us at issuesetc@kfuo.org. Here's Jane waiting on the line. Hi, Jane.
Hi, Todd. If I heard a thing from Osama bin Laden today on the radio that that what he's doing is good until every single person on every continent becomes a Muslim. And my question is it a Wahhabi? Is it a Sunni? Is it a Shia? I mean, they'll still be fighting, even if everybody does.
You know, you're right. I hadn't even thought about that. But even if we did heed the call of the al-Qaeda spokesman that we heard earlier to convert to Islam, the question still remains, what brand of Islam would you have us convert to where we can rid ourselves of your terrorist threats? What kind would we be? You know, honestly, we've talked about this so much, I'm not even sure what kind of a Muslim Osama bin Laden is. I don't know if he's a Sunni or a Shiite. I suspect he's a Shiite, only because the Shiite branch seems to have more ties with terrorism. It's Audio Open Lines this Wednesday. Thanks for the call, Jane. It's September the 6th. I want to hear from you. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Our call-in numbers, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Here's more from Romol Toon. He's co-chairman of FaithfulDemocrats.com.
As a minister, I am pro-life. And when people talk to me in that capacity, I'm pro-life. As someone who is a voter in this country, I feel that it's wrong to legislate my Christian beliefs around people who aren't Christian, who may be Christian, and don't believe what I believe.
Okay, so any new move in the Democratic Party that purports to be an appeal to people of faith has to deal with the issue of abortion. So Romol Toon says, look, I am, as a minister, pro-life, as a voter, pro-choice. Are you hearing anything different here from what you heard from the Democrats on that issue? Very important to people of faith on both the left and the right. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Do you think this appeal will be effective to draw people of faith to the Democratic Party? I've said this before, I am a registered Republican, but as the years go by, I'm less and less comfortable being a registered Republican, and I think of myself more and more as an independent, whatever that means. All right? That has a lot to do with some of the positions that are associated with the Republican Party, not the life issue, by the way. So, there are people out there, or at least the Democratic Party believes that there are a mass of people out there. Bob Edgar believes that there is the majority of Americans out there just waiting for a religious voice that isn't the voice of the religious right. They're just waiting for it, and all we need is something like FaithfulDemocrats.com to call people together into a different kind of religious movement. So are you encouraged by Democratic attempts to reach people of faith? One might argue, many have, that the Democratic Party fairly well ignored people of faith, or at least ignored the faith issue for a long, long time. Are you encouraged? Are you discouraged? Well, here's one more cut from Romol Toon, co-chairman of FaithfulDemocrats.com.
The leading cause of death for African-American males, 18 to 35, is homicide. It has nothing to do with gay marriage.
All right, so he wants to focus on issues that have nothing to do with abortion or gay marriage. He said before, as a minister, he's pro-life. If someone comes to him as a minister, then he's going to counsel them in the direction, in the pro-life direction. But when it comes to voting, he cannot legislate his morality or impose his morality legislatively on anyone else. Does that cover, if it covers issues like gay marriage, he doesn't want to impose his morality legislatively on anyone else. Abortion, he's against it, but he doesn't want to impose his morality legislatively on anyone else. What other issues does it include? If it includes gay marriage and abortion, could it also include, say, well, let's just talk about polygamy. Maybe he's personally opposed to polygamy, but he doesn't want to impose his morality legislatively on anyone else. Craig's great idea of plural dating that he's planning on trying out this weekend. What about that? What about child abuse? Who isn't against child abuse? But how could we possibly, even the vast majority of us who are against child abuse, how could we possibly impose legislatively that view, albeit the majority of you, on the minority of Americans who think child abuse is a good thing? How could we do it? Slavery. were we wrong back in the middle of the 19th century as a country to impose legislatively the morality of so many Americans in the North on so many Americans in the South by outlawing slavery and emancipating the slaves? I mean, that was a legislation of morality. If it works for gay marriage and for abortion, you really have to keep asking more questions of people like Romuald Toon of FaithfulDemocrats.com. What else are you personally opposed to but wouldn't impose legislatively on anyone else? But my bigger question, of course, for you is, how successful do you think the Democrats will be in reaching out to people of faith through efforts like this? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, and issuesetc at kfuo.org. Do you think it will make a difference to you? Would it have any appeal to you? Those are my questions for you. I want your answers. Roland's up first. He calls from St. Louis. Hi, Roland.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good.
You know, somebody better tell Warren Jeffs that you can't legislate morality.
Ooh, okay. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, you know, what is not moral about marrying a early teenage girl to a 40-year-old man? I mean, that can be perfectly moral. Don't legislate it on me. It's just something I choose as my lifestyle.
Don't
judge me.
Even Warren Jeffs could say, look, I'm personally opposed to it, but I'm not going to impose my morality on any of the 6,000 people that follow me.
Well, true. And you know, as far as the Democrats and faith, I thought that was the Methodist Church, whose commercial I saw last night that said, when you embrace diversity, you embrace God. That sounds like the Democratic Party platform to me.
Was it a television commercial?
Yeah, television commercial. It was a long series of very diverse images and very diverse people and flowery thoughts and beliefs. And it said, you know, we're the Methodist Church. And the big tagline was, when you embrace diversity, you embrace God.
I got to find out where this was.
What was it? Last night, probably the 10 o'clock hour, you know, I was surfing the news channels.
All right. So one, was it cable or was it network?
Probably network. I think it was one of the local stations that ran it.
All right, I'll see if I can track it
down.
Yeah,
but I thought it was really, you know, I thought, man, what have we come to now when the best you can come up with about the death and resurrection of Christ and your eternal salvation is to say, when you embrace diversity, you embrace God. Astonishing.
It is astonishing. Well, you know, there are people who say, maybe the Democrats have been mislabeled in associating them entirely with the religious left. You know, I think the religious right actually missed the boat on this for years and years. They failed to see that it was not a godless Democratic Party they were thinking they were opposing. But in fact, there was a very healthy movement of the religious left. It just wasn't as vocal or well-funded as the religious right. Oddly enough, they also failed to see that they shared an awful lot of tactics with each other. Here's Kia calling from Birmingham. Hi, Kia.
Hey, Todd. I just think that the whole thing with the Democrats, you know, being religious, whatever, it's just a backlash from the rights, I guess, using religion to garner votes for so long. The fact of the matter is, we all know about, you know, Lutherans' perspective on the two kingdoms. So we as Christians, I think you're right about being independent, because there are times that you're going to have to say that the Republican Party is wrong or the Democratic Party is wrong. And so I don't think as a Christian you should kind of tie yourself to some kind of party, because that's not where your loyalty lies. I'm a young voter, and I'm just so disillusioned. I've voted Republican since I've been old enough to vote. And it's just, you know, I see that it was, you know, the whole religious thing was just used to really get my vote, to really, I mean, I was convinced for so long, you know, that, you know, I mean, he very well may be a Christian and all, I can't say that, you know, but President Bush was this, you know, this diehard Christian who every day faithfully read, Oswald Chambers, I can't remember the name of the devotion.
Did that make a difference for you, Kia, when you voted?
It did, because, I mean, I voted with the party because I agree with I'm pro-life. I don't believe in homosexual marriage. So those were the things that got me out to vote. But I think hearing someone who could quote the Bible and knew when to say it and knew when to throw it out and knew when to say, I like Jesus, I had me convinced. I voted, I think 19 years old when I first voted or something like that for President Bush. And so, yeah, it did. It had me convinced, you know, that he really liked Jesus. You know, his favorite person in the world, you know, when he was on Oprah was Jesus Christ. So I believed him. But the longer I lived, the more I questioned a lot of things. And I'm kind of disillusioned. I don't think I have to vote because it's my civil duty to do so. But I feel like I don't want to.
Well, Kia, let me see if I can change your mind on that. Look, it's not only your civil duty, it's your privilege. I mean, this is a really tremendous gift that we have, and in many ways unique. It is a tremendous gift, the right to simply voice on a regular basis, in a legal way, voice our vote legally, freely. It's amazing to me that more people don't do it. It's just mind-boggling that in the freest and most democratic nation in the world, arguably, we have some of the lowest voter turnout rates. It's a privilege. It's a gift that we've been given. All right? So to encourage you to vote, however you vote. But I wonder about the rest of you. Were you similarly disillusioned? You said, here's a good Christian fellow. I'll vote for him. I agree on those big issues with him. Are you similarly disillusioned? And I'm thinking about all those 19-year-olds out there like Kia was, who are looking for something else. They don't buy into everything the Republican Party says. They're extremely wary of the religious right. In fact, probably most of them see through it like grandma's underpants, and they just see it as a political machine. You didn't like that? Grandma's underpants? Grandpa's underpants, then. Is that better for you? Do you like that image better? No? He's still shaking his head. So there are these 19-year-old...
The 19-year-olds are shaking their head with your analogy. I think that's what they're doing.
I'm hip. The 19-year-olds, I just said the last thing I ever should have said in my life. The minute someone says I'm hip, it's over with. No. There's not a hip bone in my body. But the 19-year-olds out there who are saying to themselves, look, the religious right is full of nonsense. Maybe the answer is an internet push like Faithful Democrats, where they're people of faith, they embrace these ideas, and they seem to be a big enough tent to tolerate people who are pro-life. Do you think it'll work? Do you feel like Kia, as a Christian, do you feel used by President Bush or used by the religious right? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Or are you happy with President Bush's use of his faith, judiciously using his faith throughout the last two terms? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Karen's been waiting there in St. Charles. Hi, Karen.
Hi, Todd.
Hello.
Hi, Todd.
Yes.
Yeah, and by the way, you do have two hip bones.
Oh, that's that was pretty good. Thank you.
Okay, anyway, Kia kind of stole my thunder. I agree with our philosophy or belief in two kingdoms. What does our faith have to do with what political party we're a member of? I have always been a Republican also, but I'm like you. I'm tending more and more to just kind of go by the issues and the candidate, not so much by what party they're a member of. And faith doesn't always have anything to do with it. I'd rather see someone who is a good leader, I think maybe has strong feelings that maybe I agree with on other issues. If they're a good, strong leader, I think there can be good leaders in the political arena that are not Christians. Their philosophy will be a little bit different, but I don't think that makes them a bad leader for our country. And I guess that's all I have to say.
All right, Karen, thank you. Thanks for saying it. Okay, how representative is that? We've heard from Kia and Karen, both echoing one another on this disillusionment with the party that's been most associated with the religious right. Most associated with the religious right. The Democrats have mounted an attempt to try and form a religious left. Faithful Democrats. They say, we're unabashedly Christian, we're unabashedly Democrat. Do you think it'll work? If the statistics are to be believed, there's this silent majority out there of people who want nothing to do with the religious right, but still want a place to call their political home. Do you think it's possible for Democrats to bridge the religious gap? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. It's open lines. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Tom's calling from his car. Hi, Tom.
Yeah, I really completely disagree with that last comment the lady made. Personally, I believe this country was founded upon Christianity. I definitely respect President Bush. I do believe he's leading during a difficult time in this country, and I think that every leader in this country should be a Christian leader.
How exactly was this, as you said, this country founded on Christianity?
I mean, we, from what I can recall from history class, it seems that, you know, people came to this country because they were being suppressed from other countries, and they wanted to found it upon a country of Christianity. That's what I can recall.
Well, I mean, they left one Christian country for another Christian country on the issues of religious freedom. I think that's a fair reading of history. But, I mean, like in the case of the people who came from Great Britain, they came from a country that was explicitly founded on a Christian ethic. They have a state church. The queen or the king, as the case may be, was the head of the church. Their constitution, unwritten although it is, was in fact explicitly Christian. Is there anything in the U.S. Constitution that's explicitly Christian?
Well, you know, I can't recall a whole lot about the Constitution or the history classes and all that stuff, but I firmly believe that this country should be founded upon a Christian leader, and I do believe that President Bush, in my opinion, is a good leader, and he's leading this country during difficult times.
All right, Tom, there's no doubt that he's leading the country during difficult times. I mean, any president leads the country through difficult times. It's always difficult. I don't doubt President Bush's professed faith. I don't think Kia or who is the other caller? I'm sorry. The name just escapes me.
Karen.
I don't think Kia or Karen doubt the president's professed faith. Now, Karen's point was this. Someone doesn't have to be a Christian to be a good leader, a good governor, a good commander-in-chief. I see nothing in the U.S. Constitution that would require such a thing, and I don't see anything explicitly Christian in the U.S. Constitution. If we want to talk about a country founded on Christianity, then we have to have some objective measure of that. Not just, I feel it was founded on Christianity, because you could run across a Muslim who says, yeah, I feel it was founded on Islam. Your feelings don't make any difference. What's the objective measure that says, yes, it was founded on Christianity? If you look at the founding documents, the ones that actually established the existence of this country legally, the Constitution, there most certainly are allusions to God as a creator, but nothing explicitly Christian. Were many of them Christians? Yes. But that does not a Christian country make. Many of the people who founded Harvard University were Christians. Make no mistake about it. Is Harvard University a Christian institution? No, it isn't. But even if all the founders were Christian, it still wouldn't make it Christian. A business founded by Christians isn't a Christian business. It's a business founded by Christians. Randall writes this, people of faith, quote, are liberal code words. The faith is not necessarily faith in Jesus Christ. It's all relative. It could be faith in Christ, faith in Allah, faith in the tooth fairy. It's the stuff of people from the UCC and similar persuasions. The United Church of Christ is what he's talking about. Randall continues, those people are already liberal Democrats. I think it's simply liberals preaching to the choir. And by the way, I saw the Methodist commercial. It ran on Channel 11 last night at 9:45. We've got to find this Methodist commercial. Roland's mentioned it. Randall's mentioned it. When you embrace diversity, you embrace God. Well, look, if you want to talk about who's preaching to the choir, please. The religious right has that down to a fine science. And Republicans are just as good as Democrats at mentioning God in the most generic sense and faith in the most generic sense. And visit this weekend, go to your church, synagogue, or other place of worship. There's just as much religious pluralism there. I mean, this is the president, a professed Christian, who has celebrated the end of Ramadan with Muslims, the first ever to do so. This is the president, a professed Christian, no reason to doubt that, who has publicly said that the God of Islam and the God of Christianity are the same God. If you doubt us, we have it on tape. Lindsay, no Walter? Walter writes us. Sorry, Walter. He says, why be pro-life in ministry but pro-choice when asked to vote? And he's referencing Rommel Toon's statement that as a minister, he's pro-life, but as a voter, he's pro-choice. Walter continues, it seems to me that you should be pro-life, period. It's a statement of what you personally believe. If in ministry you are pro-life, but in public you are pro-choice, who's making the moral decisions? Why can't faithful Democrats push for the party to take a pro-life stance? Some do. Many do, in fact. Then it seems you don't have to be double-minded. You know, there are a whole group of Democrats out there. We've interviewed Susan Day of Democrats for Life, Kristen Day of Democrats for Life, where you simply say, look, for many and various other reasons, they remain Democratic in the Democratic Party. But on the issue of life, they dissent from their party. And they encourage and vote for, I've asked every single one of them almost every single time, when it comes time to vote, do they punch the D or the R or the I? Or do they pay attention to where that particular candidate stands on the issue of life? And they've all told me it's the life issue. It's not the letter after their name. Now, in that sense, if you think about it, those Democrats who remain Democrat but will break with their party every time the life issue comes up, in some ways are more faithful than those who just punch R straight down the line without actually leafing through the ballot to figure out who they're voting for or what they're voting for. Christians, and I think Karen made this case, I think Kia made this case too, Christians in politics in America today simply cannot be party line voters. We cannot be the one punch voter that walks in and says, oh, there's this thing for voting for all the R's. Click. I'm done. I go home with a clear conscience. Because you don't know what you're voting for in either case. Because R after a name doesn't guarantee a vote that a Christian should cast. You know, there might be some people there in the I aisle or even in the D aisle who are worth voting for. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we're going to begin a series on teaching Sunday school. It's a weekly series with Deaconess Pam Nielsen of Concordia Publishing House. One thing we'll discover early on in that series, there's an awful lot more of the Sunday school than just flannel boards and punch-out pictures of Jesus. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues Etc., please visit the audio archive section at KFUO.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM 850 KFUO. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.